Welcome to In This Case, a podcast from Hilti that goes behind the scenes at one of the most iconic brands in the world of construction. We'll talk to the people who make it all happen and ask them who, how, what if, and of course, why. Here's your host, Ali Hernandez.
Welcome back to season 5 of In This Case. This season, we are talking about sustainability, why it matters, how it impacts construction, and why our industry and Hilti is best positioned to make construction more productive, safer, and more sustainable. Now, let's start by defining sustainability. To do so, we asked Sustainability Manager for Hilti North America, Rush Nathan, for his definition of sustainability.
You know, there's different layers of the way you would probably describe sustainability at different levels. So, you know, if I had to tell my five-year-old son what sustainability is, I would probably say something to the effect around basically doing the things that we do today, but leaving enough resources for future generations.
The United Nations defines sustainability as meeting the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. And this definition encompasses a lot of specific topics, including planet warming emissions, the extraction and use of natural resources, the health and safety of people, as well as the degree of equity within society.
In the context of a business, then, I would say sustainability is about generating a profit in a way that is that has a positive impact on the environment and on society.
When it comes to the environment, studies show that CO2 reduction is key to mitigating further climate damage. And it's also a measurable impact that has been included in the UN climate report since the report started in 1990.
You know, in 1990, I was a teenager, and I lived with my parents in Saudi Arabia.
This is Marlon Banta, mechanical engineer and lecturer at Harvard Extension School, where he leads a course that helps students prepare to improve sustainable practices in the workplace.
And in August of 1990, two things happened. One, Iraq invaded Kuwait. And another interesting thing that happened in August of 1990 was the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change released their first report. So that's really where I started to hear more and more about climate change, that this report came out from the UN, and it's not just, you know, it's not just smog, ozone layer, and all that. It's this other thing that could greatly affect our planet's ability to support life. And around that time, I started to study engineering. And my textbooks were a little bit older. And you could see a way of thinking in those textbooks that said that they said things like engineers should think of the sky and the ocean as an infinite sump that could, you know, easily absorb the output of any of our inventions. You know, a year later, the war in the Gulf had happened, and a lot of the oil wells in Kuwait had been set on fire. And so for that, the entire summer of 1991, when I was in Saudi Arabia, the sky was black every day. The winds dominantly come in from the north, and, you know, sometimes they would shift a little bit, but the sky was completely black. And the oil slick went, you know, from Kuwait all the way down to Bahrain. That was really impactful. And it wasn't true that the ocean was an infinite sump. It wasn't true that the sky was infinite. And it wasn't true that nature and the earth were larger than what could be impacted by humans.
The most recent UN climate report bears out Marlon's point that our planet's natural resources cannot absorb the output of any of our inventions.
As today's report of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, details, the rate of temperature rise in the last half century is the highest in 2,000 years. Concentrations of carbon dioxide are at their highest in at least 2 million years. The climate time bomb is ticking.
You know, the reality is we bear great responsibility for the stewardship of this planet, primarily because we can have such a dramatic impact, you know, both positive and negative. And to see, you know, just to see how negative it could be, really moved sustainability and climate change and care for the environment from an interest to an imperative in my mind.
Caring for the planet and society is becoming an imperative for business as well. And as it turns out, doing good for our planet and the people who live on it just happens to be really good for business.
You know, early on, it was really about business case. And I won't be shy in saying that. It was a business-driven decision for us to get into sustainability back in the early 2000s or mid-2000s.
This is Julia Geiswhite, Chief Sustainability Officer for Turner Construction, one of the largest general contractors in the U.S. and a leader in the industry when it comes to the topic of sustainability.
You know, we saw our most progressive clients starting to include things like LEED in their RFPs, asking us about green building opportunities, and all of the schedule and cost and technical questions that came along with it. So we really saw this as a market differentiator, kind of a bandwagon for us to get on. It was opportunistic. So at the time, early on, and back in those years, we educated thousands of our staff on kind of the basic principles of what being green is, green building.
Green building is the practice of creating structures and using processes that are environmentally responsible and resource efficient throughout a building's life cycle.
We had over 1,000 Turner staff get their LEED AP in those early years. We were offering vacation days off and gift cards. I mean, we really went, you know, wanted to have just the best baseline level of expertise on these things because our clients were asking for it. And that really served us well for a long time. We really could use it as a market. It was really a marketing strategy, and we could talk, you know, wherever we were in every business unit across the company, we had some fluency in this new emerging thing that was green buildings. You know, I don't think Turner is unique in how we've evolved from just focusing on rating systems and green building 10 years ago, 15 years ago, to a much broader view today. You know, our team has grown accordingly to kind of start focusing on all these things, but we really do try to think about the topics that are most relevant to our clients, the specific industry that is construction that we're in, because other industries have different, you know, different impacts, different focus areas, different relevant topics. So we've really spent time doing some materiality assessments with clients and stakeholders to understand what's important to them, and doing some internal reflections on what we really think is critical for our strategy going forward.
Many organizations have realized the negative, you know, impacts or negative externalities of their business on the planet, on society, and they're trying to actively address this head on, right? And they're really trying to integrate sustainability into their business model. So they're focusing on profit, of course, but also how they can have a positive impact on planet and the society. And, you know, there's many reasons they're doing this, of course, attracting talent, attracting capital, you know, lowering their operational costs, their risks. But it's also a huge competitive advantage that they can build, right? When it comes to innovation that it fosters, attracting new customers. So it's really about building that long-term advantage.
Becoming a more sustainable corporation, having a better ESG score, reducing your carbon footprint, all of these activities is great for business.
ESG stands for Environment, Society, and Governance. And it's a set of metrics that rate how sustainable a corporation is.
It is great for your bottom line. That's really where I think the focus should be, is, you know, how can we mitigate risk? How can we reduce loss and achieve great benefit from improving our ESG score? One is achieving cost savings. Greenhouse gas intensive activities are costly activities. You know, it costs a lot of money to be burning fuel, and that's only going to get more expensive. There's also the ability to get ahead of regulation, to have a seat at the table in driving regulation. It's a way to spur innovation. It's a way to demonstrate leadership and boost your company's brand. And of course, it's a way to respond to pressure from customers, investors, and stakeholders.
When it comes to stakeholders in construction, everyone along the value chain, from owners to operators, can realize tangible business benefits by becoming more sustainable.
Building owners are increasingly considering the triple bottom line effect.
And essentially what that is a cost-benefit analysis to build green, right? Looking at the impact of the revenue and the costs from building green and the impact on profitability there, but also directly from social and environmental factors. So, you know, for a large commercial property owner, building green could result in rent premiums and higher occupancy rates, lowering their operational costs, and even actually driving higher valuations of these buildings, right? And I've been following a recent example in Brooklyn in New York, where Lendlease is building a large apartment building, 834 rental units. It's about one city block in Brooklyn. And they're actually using geothermal as a way to reduce the emissions. So they're drilling 500 feet below ground and they're putting in pipes to harness the constant temperatures found down there to, you know, heat the building in the winter and cool the building in the summer. And they estimate they're actually going to be able to save about 53% in operational emissions. And it's going to cost about 6% more, but they'll easily make up for that cost difference with the energy savings. By the way, they were also able to attract millions of dollars in funding to deploy this green technology.
More than ever before, there's business case in this. So if people's ears are perked to hearing that there's dollar signs, guys. I mean, there are clients asking, there are corporate ESG goals out there that are driving decisions. So absolutely, that's one factor. But I would say 40%. So that's the number everyone should know. Buildings are 40% of global greenhouse emissions every single year.
That 40% includes the operational emissions from energy needed to heat, cool, and power the building, as well as the materials and construction efforts needed during construction.
You know, we really need to look more comprehensively at, for us as builders, the footprint that we were having to make those, to bring those buildings to fruition. So we also have come to appreciate that the materials that we use to build have an enormous environmental footprint. So that has really come to the forefront of problems we need to solve. We know things like concrete and steel have significant emissions, and the building industry uses these more than any other industry. So we know we play a part in this problem of global warming, climate change, and thereby we have responsibility to help.
There's an abundance of technologies. You know, when we talk about greenhouse gas reduction strategies in class, one category is behavioral change. And so we need to start believing that it's possible and understanding that it's possible and understanding how important it is. And it's a combination of behavioral change and technology.
We have the technology today to solve many of these issues. And we can actually have construction and buildings be part of the solution and not be part of the challenge. We just need to come together, act fast, scale this quickly, and collaborate across the supply chain, like in a way that we've never done before.
This is the first episode in our sustainability podcast series. Thanks for listening. In the next episode, we'll talk to Hilti's corporate head of sustainability, Peter Rupp, to discuss Hilti's unique approach to sustainability. That's next time on In This Case.